dear mother and sister. We are greatly fortunate that we have got man body. Man body is the highest in all creation, next to God. Even the angels bow down to the man body when it was made. All scriptures tell us the reactions are very good actions of the past man gets man body. So really we are very fortunate. Our good actions have fructified. We have got the man body as a result thereof. It is a golden opportunity in which we can pay off all reactions of the past and also free, we are free within certain limits. Leaving man body aside, all other bodies are bound. They have got no free action there. So in man body we have got, we are bound to certain extents as a reaction from the past and free also within certain limits. So we are, if we are wise enough, we pay off the old reaction of the old karmas and go back home. So it is a time, either we can go home or go back again in the wheel of life in this. Be very cautious, this is a very golden opportunity we have got. Try to understand how to pay up all our area of debts which we have to pay up. So you will find we have to be very cautious, each thought which strikes us, that this reaction. Each thought, each word, and each deed has to be accounted and compensated for in nature. Nature spares no man. As you sow, so shall you reap. No exception to the rule. Never think idly of anything. If you think idly of anything, even that has the answer. Fifth Guru says, be afraid of the sins we have done without any unknowing. That will also be every answer. So every cause has an effect. We have to understand this principle, this law. If we understand this principle, law of karma, then we can come out of it and go back home. Otherwise, we will keep coming and going and coming. So each cause has an effect, and every action brings about a reaction. Uproot the cause and the effect disappears. This has been done by the masters who have transcended these laws. But all others are bound by the bonds of karmas, which is the root cause of physical existence. Of course, these are very good actions, reactions of which you have got the man body. In this we are also to be very careful what to do. Either we are trying to go back down or up back home. So there are three kinds of karmas. One are those karmas which are called as sanchit. Sanchit means which are stored as yet, not fructified. So such like karmas you see from hundreds of years back, they are in store, not yet touched for reaction. In India, in the time of the Pandavas, there was one Dhritarashtra. She was a great yogi, but blind from birth. And people asked him, Lord Krishna asked him, you are blind very birth, what comes? Some actions you have incurred, some karmas you have incurred, the result of it you are blind from the very birth. And he told him that by yogic power, I know up to 100 years back, I have done no such action. The result of which could be blind. So Lord Krishna, who is of yogician, that is, you see, he just gave him help to go back still further. And he found that in 106th birth back, he did some action, the result of which now he is blind. So mind that there are akashic records, you see. Whatever we speak, whatever we think, that is recorded in the akashic. Those who can read those akashic, they can give you, I mean, statements made 100 birth back. Ever since we have left the house of our father, ever since we have been sent to the earth, we have been coming and going, action reaction been going on. Some have been paid up by prarabdha karma. Prarabdha karma are the karma which are in fruit, which are fructified, on the base of which our present existence is based. First we have got man body, that is the highest result of very high karma, good karma. Now also we are bound certain limits unless those reactions are paid off. If no further actions are shown, seeds are shown. So we are within certain limits free also. So prarabdha are the karma, the karma which our present life is based. It is what is called fate or destiny. Fate or destiny is the reaction of our karmas which are in fruit now. So the third class is kriyaman, our action that we did do this. So as I submitted, man is free to certain limits and bound with a certain. Just think, take the example of a boy who is flying the kite in the air. He's got, what is it, 200 or 300 yards thread which he is flying the kite in the air. But his father is at the back which is keeping 200 yards thread in his control. He is allowed only 100 yards thread long to enable his son to fly the kite. So he can fly the kite only up to 100 yards, not more. Only those actions which are reacting now. So prarabdha portion is not touched because it is based on the present existence. It is the result of present. Present life is the result of a reaction of the past in present life. So these karmas are of different natures. Some karma bear fruit very quickly, others little later, others very long. Take the example of the courts. There are small cause courts, there are high courts, and there are privy council courts. Isn't it? Ordinary cases are settled in a week or a month or so. Cases indicated take months to decide in high courts. And they are still of very intricate nature, they take years to decide in privy council. You follow my point? So we incur action, reaction daily. They are bearing fruit, some quickly, some later, some still. As in the case of Dhritarashtra, I quoted you. He had such like karmas of 100 births back. So what we reap in this life, the remaining is transferred to the sanchit karma. Karma is the cause of rebirth, and each birth is in turn followed by death. there the cycle of enjoyment and suffering results. Some are happy, some are not happy. So as you think, so you become. Ignorance of law is no issue, mind that. You say, we don't know what was your son, you must leave. Whether you sow good deeds, good actions, or bad actions, both are binding. Irons, handcuffs are chains made of iron or gold that are equally binding on you. This is karma life, rather difficult to understand, but if you follow it, we can save our lives or come down to the earth. So, fortunately, how to pay off this, to come about the law of this wheel of life? You daily sow seeds, they will bear forth fruit. Some are being fructified, some are being laid in the Sanchit Karma and store, the others daily, some are fruiting, still some. Our Sanchit store of our karmas is great. So in this light, if man meets some master who knows this law of nature, how to wield it and how to liberate us from that law, he takes the process of winding up all karmas of the initiate. He takes it. It's very difficult, you see, very onerous job of being a master. First of all, what it does, it gives you contact with the sound current within, by practicing which Sanchit Karmas are burnt away. It's a great blessing. All karmas in store are burnt down. They would not fructify in future life. Then for Kelaman Karmas, the karmas that we do daily, he prescribes diary to be maintained. You see, now mark the purpose for the diary maintained. It is a very important work to do. He is enjoined to lead a clean life and weed out all imperfections in him by self-introspection from day to day. This you are instructed to do. So prarabdha karma is not touched. Those karmas as a result of which we have got the present life. If they touch this, then the life will end. The more very moment it touches the prarabdha karma, the life will end. So it does not touch, because it is the cause of the physical body, which will vanish due to interference in the nature law. So a very small remains to be tolerated by the man or the initiate during the present life. You have Sanchit Karmas in store and burnt away by coming conditions. The more you come with the sound principle within you, Naam or world, the two aspects of which is Naam, light and sound, your Sanchit in store karma will be burnt away, finished. Prarabdha karma are not touched. Kelaman karmas are, just as I told you, for that you may should be very strict. Don't spare yourself, as you should criticize yourself as you would like to criticize others. And weed out day to day. Some of the remaining karmas are the Kelaman karmas, you see. They are also polished down. You see, sharpened down by the master, by devotion. Now you see, when you sit by a master, you keep silence for a few minutes. Mind does not raise any trouble. You have no thought. This is result of the radiation of the master. And the qualification of the master is given in whose sitting, in whose presence, your mind does not rake up any trouble for a while. And if you give it, as I told you yesterday, that if you go to a man who sells sense, In male division, by the lady you get perfume. Similarly, in his presence you should sit fully, what you say, receptive. For the time your mind won't be recommended, then by radiation. And if you contact with him, you see, that file of perfume is given to you. So star of karma, you see, are not touched. So for a person, because they are, on that you have no control, that have to react. What has to come past must come to pass, no exception to rule. So it is, however, possible one way out. What? One may so mold and develop his inner self through the guidance of the Master Soul that they may not feel the bitter sting of the sin. Just to take up example of a kernel, I mean, what is, say, almond or walnut, when it is not ripe, you can put in a needle through across. But when it is ripe, the shell is separated from the kernel, and you put in the needle won't pass through the kernel, to the shell, is it not? If Master, you sit by the Master, he wants, he gave you a way up to rise above body consciousness, then it is all outer things do come up as a result of the prarabdha karma, but they have not the pinches of it. You find that the blessing of the Master. A child is to be, say, operated on. The mother takes the child in her lap and gets the operation done, and the child is satisfied. You see, down the lap of the mother, you see. Those initiated, those who are devoted to the Master within, they do get bitter results of the past, reactions of the past, but they are not felt. If they rise above daily about body consciousness, this will know them. There's a case of one Abdullah devotee of Miami in India, as a result of the prarabdha karma, he was suffering when he rose above back the eye. And the Master came, oh, what are you doing? You are thrown deep. You must bear the result of that. Why are you sitting up there? Hello? But this is the grace of the Master. If you fall in, for the kedaman karma, we have to weed out all imperfections by dying. By past, those karmas which are installed, those are burnt away, the more you come in contact with light, it sounds with you. So recent karmas which are due daily, they are weeded out by self-intercession, whatever remains, that also are smoothed down by the love of the Master. Pinching of us does not remain the same. So that is it, you see, like walnut or almond, which is not ripe, you can put needle through. But when it is ripe, shell is separated, you may put in needle, it won't pass. Similar, it happens something like when you are concentrated at the back of the eye. You find a stay there. You at will work at the level of the outgoing faculty. Then all these come, men will die, men will suffer, may be operated on, isn't that? How great blessing you got in you. So for that reason, you see, what is required now? Is there another kind of karma? One is kereman, the other is prarabdha, the third is what is called in store, sanchit. There is another form of karma, this is called nishkarma. Karma performed without any attachment or desire for the fruit thereof. You see? This is superior to all the forms of karma which are more or less are the source of bondage. Yet this type helps a little to liberate one from karmic reactions, bondage. So if you do some job without any food, that won't bind you. This is one thing. But so long as the ego is there, how can you not? You won't feel that you are not doing. You are my brother. So long as you are doer, whether your good actions are bad, even at your heart of heart you know, I've done good action. That will be a fruitful. So, ne karma, as in selfless karma, comes up only when you become conscious co-worker. In the yoga too, you find in the Hatha yoga, in the karma yoga, they say you become ne karma. Don't want any fruit. But how can you become ne karma unless you become the conscious co-worker of the divine self, that he is the doer, I am not the doer. So long as you are the doer, you may have, you will bear the good fruits also, heaven, another thing, and this life too. So you will find it is all the karma, born of desire, or karma that leads to one, leads to bondage. This is why you see what Moses taught. Desire not. What Buddha taught, be desireless. What 10th Guru of the 6th taught, kamna bahin. Don't have any desire for the result. That is, by doing, the highest of all is to be ne karma. That is, doing karma in accordance with the divine plan, as a conscious co-worker of the power of God. Now you find 4 kinds of karma. Present karma is done by direct, and whatever left you are devoted to the master, that is also smoothed down. Present karma is not touched. You have to bear the bitter fruits of that. But while sitting at the feet of the master, you are falling, rising above body, conscious, daily, to die daily. Then outer pinching effect, bitter effects of your reaction to the master won't affect you. As I gave you an example. Now you find how important it is to do your practice daily. In brief, the law of karma is nature's stubborn and inexorable law from which there is no escape and there is no exception. Even the avatars bear the fruit of it. What to speak of men? It is said of Lord Rama, killed the brother of the king of the Shilom by standing behind a tree. It is said in our scriptures even. When he died, he said, "Well, Rama, I did not know nothing against you. Why you kill me? You will have to suffer." So it so happened the next incarnation of the Lord Krishna came up, and that man took the form of a bear in the jungle, you see. And Lord Krishna was lying in the wilderness with his left feet over his right knee. And there was some star in there, you see, which is always in the feet of the incarnation. The hunter saw that there was the eye of a deer. So he shot the arrow, and that stuck in the feet of the Lord Krishna, and he died of that. Even avatars are not expected to rule. What to speak of ordinary men? Be careful. Every thought what kills you, that reels. So as you sow, so shall that the general rule for those on earth, who are on earth. As you think, so you become. It is from the abundance of the mind that the tongue speaks. Every action has a reaction, for that is nature's law, cause and effect. One has therefore to bear the fruit of his action, no exception. Is there any remedy for that? So masters have what a remedy. As I just submitted to you, I quoted the case of Abdullah, the devotee of Miyamir. So you rise above the own. Just in daily life, you see, when you want to have an injection, you will draw your attention here. That's all I know. Inject. You feel pain very less. If you can withdraw your attention fully, that may be cutter. So this is very regular way which the Master puts us on the way. See, it is only when one transcends the body consciousness and becomes nekarma, or actionless inaction, like the still point at the center of the ever-evolving being of life, that the stop is put to the motion of the great wheel of karma. The machine going on, you think, there's one something to stop the that is it. Clock. And machine doesn't work. So law of karma doesn't work in case of those who rise above body consciousness, actually. That is why, you see, Buddha said, be desireless, for desires are the root cause of human suffering, all suffering. Some die, some born, some sick, some poor, some like that. Length of life is also, I mean, based on that. Some high, some low, some power in poverty, some very rich, affluent circumstances. These are based on the reaction, the past. So what happens, you see, the spirit sitting the chariot of body is driven blindly and headlong into the fields of sensual pleasures and sensual pleasures by the five powerful steeds of the organic faculties, which are driven by the intoxicated mind. So mind also has to be controlled. If something is given to the mind, more peaceful, more peaceful, only that, not otherwise. So because the reins of the intellect are dangling, loose, when the steeds are running fast, headlong, this is how we incur actions and that results in reaction, wrong like anything. Ever since we have come down from the Father, we have been on earth. We have been coming and going. Man body we have been having as a very great fortune. We did not utilize the man body, did not understood the law of karma. There are two karma laws. One law of karma, the other the law of grace. So you come to the feet of the Master, there the law of grace works, I think. Your present karma is also softened up, and they give a tally for that. Sentient karmas are burnt away by giving a contact with some light principle within you. And Bharavad karma, no power can withstand them, but the Master, what he gives you to rise above body conscious and daily, the pinching of existence. How fortunate we are. It is why it is said it is a great blessing to have a living Master. Don't you realize that? Even the incarnations have to undergo the law. They are not exempt from the law of cause and effect. What to speak of every man. So, by being, these are the things you see prescribed by the Master. Ever since they have been coming. They have been telling us what to do. Be born anew. And voila, what is the basis? Teaching behind it is be born, reborn. I've been saying to you in my one or two talks, what is meant by reborn? One to born into this man body, another into the beyond. If you're daily reborn, die daily, take cross daily, then all these should naturally follow. You escape the effects of the wheel of life, of karma. Now you'll find how important it is to do the practice as described by the Master. Masters don't spare anyone. He said, look here, look your man, O Master, what is the use of our coming to your feet if the law of karma is not satisfied? They give example, what is the use of going to the feet of a lion and they are all foul of you? It is a great privilege, I would say.
Good morning. Welcome to the Satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was the first 30 minutes of a talk titled Law of Karma. It was given by Master on 29th October 1972 in Chicago, Illinois. Our reader this morning is Michael Brown. Go ahead, Michael.
Thank you, and good morning, all. Today I will continue reading from Master's book, The Mystery of Death, beginning where I left off last time I read, on page 92, chapter 4, entitled Death in Bondage. Hafiz, the mystic poet of Persia, says, "On the day of reckoning thou shalt know for certain, in the land of dervishes there is no count of deeds." Shams Tabriz, another great mystic of Persia, says, "Death breaks down the cage, liberating the spirit. Death has no sway over phoenix that dies to soar again. Why should I not fly back to my own home? Why should I tarry in the clayey mold?" Again, when others are forced blindfolded into the blind alley, while the lovers wend their way happily to the Lord, the ignorant ones die a horrifying death. Those who pass sleepless nights in fear of God, they have no regrets in life, nor any hopes and fears. While here they seek his glance of grace, merrily do they go in his holy presence. The third category comprises such persons as make the most of the instructions imparted to him by the Master, but have not yet attained perfection, though they are well on their way to it. Such souls know the time and day of their departure in advance of the event. Since they are fully conversant with the death process, and every day undergo its experience, they are not afraid of death, and know its shadowy character. On the contrary, they wishfully and wistfully await the appointed time, and voluntarily throw off the worn-out mortal mantle, just in the same way as they had put it on their advent into the world. They know some of the higher planes of the spirit world, which they traverse day in and day out, along with the Master Power, and know the particular plane to which they are ultimately to go for sojourn after death. There they live for some time and work for their way up to still higher regions. They live all the time consciously in the love of the Master, and the Master Power ever abides in them. He is their mainstay and support, and they owe no allegiance to anyone else. Led by the Spirit, they are no more under the law, St. Paul. Last, and not least, come the perfected souls. They, while living, are liberated beings, Jivan Mukats, and lead a freed life of the Spirit. They know full well, far ahead of the time, as to when they have to go back to the mansion of the Lord, and gladly await the hour and welcome the manner in which they are required to quit the bodily frame, be it on the cross or the gibbet, on the red-hot iron plates or on the executioner's block. With no will of their own, they live in the will of God and joyously embrace death as a means of reunion with the Beloved, unmindful of the swift or lingering process of death, as may sometimes be ordained by the religious zealots and tyrannical pontiffs and potentates, for that is the moment of highest jubilation for them. Thenceforth, they live out their span of life from moment to moment. They care not if they are flayed alive, hacked to pieces, or burnt at the stake, or made to drink a cup of hemlock, or nailed to the cross along with felons. They give a hearty handshake to death as it comes in their way, no matter what form it may assume. This, then, is the way that Gurumukhs, the saints, and the prophets follow. Of Guru Amar Das, it is said that when the time of his departure drew nigh, he called for the Sangat congregation and addressed, "I am going back to Hari, the Lord. No one should weep for me. He who will do so will incur my displeasure. After I am gone, be ye all engaged in the silent music of the soul." Similarly, Shamas Tabriz says, "On the day of my death, as my bier slowly moves along, never for a moment feel that I am going with any regret in life. When you see my coffin, utter not a word of separation, for then alone I am in unison with the Lord. When I will turn my face away from the world, I will then be facing the eternal reality." Hazur Baba Jamal Singh Ji Maharaj had foretold of his approaching end long before it actually came about. When he was nearing his earthly pilgrimage, he said, "I am going back to my native place, and none should press me to stay on. My mission in this life is over, and I have amassed immense spiritual riches. Happily, I go to the mansions of the Lord." It is a sacrilege to lament and bewail the passing away of saints, for verily do they go back to their own home. One may, if he likes, shed copious tears at the death of a worldling who is forcibly ejected from and dragged out of the body by the prince of the netherworld, and passes through devious processes up and down. O Kabir, why weep for a saint who goes back home? Weep, if you must, for a worldly wise who tosses from hand to hand. Saints, when called back on completion of their mission, are given an honored place in his court. To die such a death is a rare privilege and a real blessing which may be envied by mighty kings and emperors. That concludes chapter 4, and I'll now move into chapter 5, the final chapter of this book, entitled, What After Death? And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light, Genesis 1:3. And this is the true light that lighteth every man that cometh into the world, and light is the life of men. In memorable words like these, all the scriptures describe the genesis or creation of the world and of all that is in the world. Rays of light vibrating with the music of man, emanating from the formless absolute existence, came to manifest the world in its variegated colors in countless shapes and forms. As above, so below. The spirit and power of God manifested in the vibrating holy light pervades all of the four grand divisions of universe. Sach Khand, the abode of truth or the changeless permanence in its pristine purity, with the material cause of the mind yet hidden and involved therein. The Brahmand, or the egg of Brahman, the second grand division of the universe, brought into being by the universal mind of elemental essence by the will of the Supreme Being. And the next, Und, or the third grand division, called the astral world, with mind stuff in its subtle state. And lastly, Pind, or the physical world, the fourth grand division, the handiwork of the gross mind. During our sojourn on the earth plane, we work out our destiny or fate as planned with great precision and exactitude by what is called prarabdha karmas, which determine in broad outline the general framework marking the duration and course of life in each case. This plane is a big counting house, or a clearing house, so to say, in which each one has to square up his or her accounts, coming down the ages, and in doing so we willy-nilly open fresh accounts and raise credits and debits to be paid off and cleared in the distant future, and no one knows how and when, and in what form and in what manner. Thus, while reaping the harvest sown in the past, we prepare the ground for fresh sowing in season and out of season, with seeds good, bad, or indifferent, and all this we do promiscuously, prompted by the mind and the senses. The sages call the earth plane as Karam Kshetra, or the field of actions where sowing and harvesting automatically go on all the time. Under the superintendence, direction, and control of Dharam Rai, the King of Shadows, who measures and judges each thought, word, and deed, however trivial and insignificant it may appear to be, rightly and justly, and administers justice to each at the end of one's lifespan. Nanak calls this region Dharam Khand, for each pilgrim soul coming to this region has to realize in fullness the existence of the law of retribution and requital, which governs all alike with no favors and no exceptions. Each is weighted with the weight of its own acts and deeds, and learns sometimes with hard blows and heavy knocks the grand lessons of Brahman, the Lord of the Three Realms, the gross or physical, subtle or astral, and causal or instrumental, Pind, Und, and Brahmand, all of which are the mind zones of the universal mind, with numberless planes and subplanes, including inter alia various hells and heavens, with intermediate stages as one may create by one's senses, sensibilities, and susceptibilities, likes and dislikes, loves and hatreds, prides and prejudices, born of desire of one kind or another. Each one thus builds his own habitat, and not only here, but also in the hereafter, the astral and mental worlds, where one stores up his impressions gathered from time to time in different incarnations from the beginning of time. All these linger in the soul in the form of general latencies in the folds of the karmic body, and a part of them at the time of rebirth prepares an etheric body in advance of the coarse, dense body. Thus, destiny is cast into the mold before the physical vesture is prepared to work out the causes involved therein. Similarly, at the time of death, the departing soul carries with it all the life impressions deeply engraved on the tablet of the mind, and the ruling passions of the entire lifetime, now singled out in blazing colors which determine the course of its future destinations in the astral and or mental world of spirits. Stripped of the physical mantle, each soul displays its subtle individuality, as it were, in the light of the noonday sun. Men may deceive themselves here for any length of time by wearing pious looks and dressing in attractive clothes. They may, for the time being, succeed in deceiving others. None can play the hypocrite in the astral world where one is denuded of the solid outer covering, the gross garment of the flesh. O Nanak, it is there that the divine mystery is finally revealed. The perfect are they who worship perfection, and the imperfect are perfected over there. Such, as the dying come to be born again, are yet imperfect. The astral world is the world of spirits or disembodied souls, souls having cast off the physical body and yet enfolded in the subtle and mental coverings. It is also called Pitrilok, the place of the Pitris, or manes of the deified souls of the departed ancestors. Here the souls are imprisoned in the seven-shelled encasement of the astral world, drawing subtle material from each of the seven subplanes existing therein. It is here that they work out the causes which they set going on the earth plane by undergoing certain purificatory processes in the divine crucible so as to make them worthy of the land of the Shining Ones after the dross is burned off. Mrs. Annie Besant, 1847 through 1933, a pupil of Madame Blavatsky, in her famous study, The Ancient Wisdom, has given a graphic description of the various subplanes in what she calls Kamlok, a lower subplane in the astral world. As the name indicates, it is a place of desires and is said to contain seven subdivisions in it, each peopled by persons of varying natures and temperaments. The scum of the society, the vilest of the vile, the murderers and marauders, ruffians and profligates, and persons with bestial tastes and brutish appetites, who while living on earth shaped for themselves bestial astral bodies, now appear after death in savage forms, in their natural likenesses and native hideousnesses, in the lowest strata of the infernal region, roaming about, roaring, raving, and raging, fiercely and furiously, pret-like wandering in search of means for the gratification of their insatiate desires. In these gloomy and loathsome surroundings, they reap the harvest of their own sowing and learn the much-needed lesson which they failed to learn during their lifetime, as they were whirled away in the tide of lusts and desires. Nature's lessons are bitter and sharp, but merciful in the long run, designed as they are for their ultimate good. To the next plane go such souls as quit their bodies with some deep anxiety weighing heavily on them, or such who had implacable appetites or desires for self-enjoyment and gratification. Then, there are two subplanes for those who are educated and thoughtful people, chiefly occupied with worldly affairs during their lifetime on earth. Their attention is directed more onwards than backwards because they belong to the progressive types. From the fifth subplane onwards, the environment changes considerably, becoming astral in the true sense of the word, i.e. truly starry, studded as it is with stars, and the surroundings are cheerfully inspiring. These three subplanes are euphemistically termed heavens, heavens of a lower type, sometimes spoken of as by the later Jews as infernal heavens, being situated in the infernal world as distinguished from supernal heavens. The religious and the philosophic busybodies find their way to the materialized heavens in the fifth region, which they desire and coveted while on earth, like the happy hunting grounds, the Valhalla, the final resting place of the illustrious dead and heroes slain in battle, the joy-filled Bahisht, or paradise of the Muslims, the golden jewel gated New Jerusalem, or the Lyceum filled heaven. The souls of the more advanced type, like artists, find a place in the sixth subdivision. The seventh, or the highest subdivision, is entirely for the materialistically oriented intellectuals, like politicians and administrators and men of science, who were pronouncedly materialistic on earth and wedded to the ways of the world in acquiring knowledge. Life in Camlock is said to be more active, forms more plastic, and the spirit matter more highly charged and more subtle and intangible and imperceptible, though transparent or translucent. The thought forms here appear and disappear with kaleidoscopic rapidity because of the great velocity of the vibrations generated by sensations, feelings, and emotions. A spiritually advanced person with a purified astral body merely passes through Camlock without delay. The pure and the temperate, though less vapid in his plight, dreams away peacefully through it. Others, less developed still, awaken to consciousness in the region similar to the one in which they worked in their lifetime. Those whose animal passions still cling to them, prets, wake up, each literally and exactly, to his own place, in the appropriate regions to which he belongs. This plane is treacherous and tricky, and as such, those who are initiated by a perfect master of the time into the divine mysteries of the beyond are not permitted to tarry, lest they be bewitched here. On the contrary, they are quickly led under cover through it to higher regions for gaining maturity and stability, so as to be able at a later time to face it with confidence and to stand the tempting witchery and delusive and illusory charm of the place, and do not get stuck up in their march upwards in the spiritual region. From the astral world of desires, some of the souls pass on to another world, the world of thoughts. It is a mental zone, manomai sristi, created by the thinking mind, or manas, as it is called. Thoughts have tremendous energy, and each person, while on earth, creates his own dreamland of flights of imagination and fancy. And to this, the soul, after death, is gradually led on to experience the castles built in the air, as the saying goes. Mind at every stage, from the universal Brahman with his pure mind essence down to the individual, weaves a world of its own and takes delight to live in it as a spider caught in the web of its own making, and flits up and down, right and left, of the gossamer texture so artistically set up, with a light filmy substance coming out of its own body. So do the thought patterns and thought images of each individual go out to make a wonderful thought kingdom, far in advance of the time that the thinker in the body is freed from the prison house of the physical existence in the material world. As you think, so you become. This is the law of nature, and no one can escape from its operation. In this world of thoughts, thought vibrations are the only channels of communication between soul and soul, and all the souls live in close communion with each other. There, space and time do not matter. If at all there is any separation between them, it is only due to the lack of sympathy and not for anything else. All in all, life there is richer, fuller, and more advanced than in any of the foregoing regions. But it continues to be delusive. It brings the outcome of the mind stuff of each, and no one here can totally escape from delusions, though each one enjoys in full his own heaven world, and expanding or shallow and restricted according to one's own mind stuff. But all the same, each one retains in him a sense of reality in the midst of surrounding illusion. A sanctuary of special interest in the mental world is Devlok, the abode of the devas, or the shining ones, people highly enlightened in their time and greatly advanced in their researches. Here are located the Svargas and Vaikunths of the Hindus, the Sukhvati of the Buddhists, the heavens of the Zoroastrians and Christians, the Arshas of the less materialized Muslims, and the supernal paradises or pleasure grounds of the later Jews. Here lies the Garden of Eden, from where man was expelled and excluded by God for his first disobedience of his commandments. John Milton, 1608-74, a great poet and genius of his age, and a profound political and spiritual thinker, has, in his immortal classics Paradise Lost and Paradise Regained, given a wonderful account of the fall of man and his resurrection, and the return unto him through the intercession of the Son of Man. Without wading through the scriptures of various religions, dealing with post-mortal existence of man in the various realms, we would do well to once again refer to Brahmavidya, or the divine wisdom rightly termed by the Greeks as Theosophia, which provides an adequate philosophy, embracing in its fold the wisdom of the East and the West. Turning again to the great occultist Mrs. Annie Besant, we find the mental plane inhabited by human beings after they cast off their physical and astral vestures. Purged of the selfish animal passions, each one enters into this region to reap the harvest of his good deeds, whatever the same may be, large or small, according to the measure of good thoughts of personal self, aspirations and ambitions, hopes and fears, loves and interests. We cannot have more than what we are, and our harvest is according to our sowing. Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Galatians 6:7. It is the universe of the good law, mercifully just, and brings to each the exact wages or meed of his work on earth. everything thought of, every aspiration worked up into power, frustrated efforts transmuted into faculties, struggles and defeats become pillars of strength and power, sorrows and errors forged into shining armor now find fruition in one of the seven subplanes, or heavens, in the land of midnight sun, where self-consciousness awakening makes one fully conscious of his non-self surroundings, with memory spreading out into the hitherto unknown past, bringing to view the causes that worked out his life on earth and the causes that were wrought by him likewise from the vast future. The past, the present, and the future now present to him an integrated view of life, like an open book with nothing to hide and withhold. Here he develops for himself an all-seeing eye and becomes a perfect seer, so far as his individuality is concerned, in the true sense of the word. In this heaven world, the lowest part is assigned to the least developed souls with sincere and unselfish love for their families and friends, and admiration for nobler, purer, and better persons than themselves. The measure of their meed is accordingly narrow and shallow, the cup of their receptivity being small, but still bubbling over to the brim with joy, purity, and harmony, and they are reborn after a while on this plane with improved powers and faculties. Next come in men and women of religious faith with hearts and minds turned towards God, the personal God of their own choice, with any name and any form they had faith in. And to them the nameless and the formless appears in the said likeness in which they lovingly worshipped him, overwhelming them with devotional ecstasy according to their mental and emotional capacity. The divine veils himself in the form familiar to his devotee. It is really strange that men forget that all deities reside in the human breast. We have but to turn inward to get a glimpse of the formless, in the very form in which we adore him the most. It is therefore said, formless is he, and yet all forms are his. Nameless is he, and yet all names are his. Call him by any name thou wishest, and he turns to thee. To the third plane come devoted and earnest souls who see and serve God and man and worship him in his manifested creation. At this place they are perfected into great philanthropists of times yet unborn and endowed with a rich power of unselfish love for mankind. The souls of masterminds in fine arts like music, sculpture, and painting, the researchers and discoverers of the laws of nature, eager and reverent students delving into the depths of knowledge get an opportunity in the fourth subplane for developing into perfect teachers of mankind in the ages to come. And when they do come, they serve as torchbearers and leave their footprints on the sands of time. Next, there are three lofty regions of formless heavens. A large number of souls simply reach the lowest reaches, have but a brief stay, and a flash of insight according to their sowing, and then they come back to the earth plane with a dip into the great unknown. Souls with deep thinking and noble living correctly and immediately perceive truth see the fundamental causes and the underlying unities and learn of the changeless workings of the divine law in all harmony in the midst of the most incongruous effects as appeared to the untrained eye, and where, though all things differ, all agree. More advanced souls, with memory perfect and unbroken, find their way to the sixth subplane. And after garnering the riches of the divine mind, Brahman, return as great pioneers of mankind to justify the ways of God to man and to glorify God. The mighty dead of ages gone by here get a taste of the glorious living, seeing and witnessing, as they do, the workings of the will of Brahman in its fullness, with no link missing in the chain of causation. In the loftiest subplane come the souls of the masters of Brahmavidya and their initiatives, brahmacharis, for none but an initiate can find the straight gate and the narrow path that leadeth unto life. And so the chosen few enter into the land and life of Brahman. They enjoy their self-consciousness to the highest point, but they are not yet endowed with cosmic consciousness. So that concludes my reading today. I finished chapter 4 of Mystery of Death. Chapter 4 is called Death and Bondage, and began the final chapter, chapter 5, What After Death, ending on page 108. Thank you, dear Master, for sharing these words of wisdom with us, and thanks to all of you for listening.
And thank you, Michael, for reading this for us. 83 of us attended today's satsang. Thank you all for your company, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
Thank you for your patient hearing. What I have come to know, I have come for you. It is for you to, for calm consultation, how it appears to you.